passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
You're back. A lot happening from now until tomorrow night when the first college football playoff rankings is revealed. Heather Dinich joining us. A lot of important questions, maybe the most unusual we've had in a long time. Heather, thanks for the time. Let's start with the Michigan conundrum. We know Michigan can't talk about it, but the committee can. They can talk about it, even though I think the AD is part of this committee. Tell us what do you think the conversations are going to be like, and what are the ramifications of this scandal that is brewing about Michigan?
Well, you're right, Paul. Michigan Athletic Director Ward Manuel is on the selection committee. I've confirmed that he is here. He does have to recuse himself during the discussions about where to place Michigan, but the college football playoff has not given any particular statement as to how they will direct the committee, if they will, to handle this. The only official statement that CFP Executive Director Bill Hancock has issued on this is that if a team is eligible to participate in a bowl game, it is eligible to be ranked by the committee. So I reached out to former selection committee members and asked them about how they thought this group might handle this situation. And most of them that I talked to said if they follow their protocol, which NC State Athletic Director Boo Corrigan will remind them of at the start of the meeting as their committee chair, this likely will not impact Michigan right now. Because, as one former committee member told me, if they try to be the police in this situation or let any of their personal feelings into this, it could adversely impact the rest of the rankings and unintentionally reward a team that might not deserve to be ranked higher in that spot. Now, another former committee member said these are human beings who also know exactly what's going on, and there will be conversations in the hallway, maybe as they're eating their meals together, and some disgust about what has happened. But when they get back into that room, there is a very standard protocol that they will be reminded to follow, and it's quite possible that the bigger issue for Michigan is going to be their strength of schedule.
Well, and let's get to what else is going to be discussed. And so I've never heard a first Tuesday night conversation with so much mystery. Usually that comes later. What do you think the main topic of conversation in relation to not only the strength of schedule, but who belongs in there? How do you see it being framed, and then what happens tomorrow night?
Well, the big picture, Paul, is there are five undefeated Power 5 teams and four top spots to be had. So somebody's clearly being left out here. So the big question is, who is number one? There are people who are so conditioned to be seeing back-to-back national champion Georgia at the top spot that there could be some shock outside of this room if Georgia's not number one. And Georgia might not be number one because they might not have any wins against top 25 teams. Georgia's best wins right now are against Kentucky, and I'll remind everyone that Kentucky Athletic Director Mitch Barnhart is on the selection committee. He could very well be asked by the committee chair, "You've seen Georgia in person, what do you think?" And I'm sure he will respond that they are a very strong team. But beyond Kentucky and Florida, Georgia doesn't really have any statement wins. Teams above them, possibly ranked ahead of them, certainly do. Ohio State, for Ohio State fans, watch where Penn State and Notre Dame are ranked, because if they are ranked in the top 15, which I would expect them to be, Ohio State might have the best resume in the entire country and could certainly be ranked number one. And while their offense hasn't been as explosive, their defense has not allowed any opponent more than 17 points this season. So who's at the top spot? They will weigh resume versus eye test. Eye test is Michigan all the way. With all of those allegations to the side, when you're looking at them, they are number one in ESPN's strength of record metric. But their best win, Paul, is against the 6-2 Rutgers team. Washington, best win in the country against Oregon. Florida State, beat LSU in Orlando. The win against Clemson no longer as convincing now that the Tigers have four losses. So how do those teams stack up? I would predict, just as we're sitting here, based on the best combination of resume and eye test, don't be surprised if the Buckeyes are number one.
Yeah, and for Georgia fans who are spitting nails right now, they have three games coming up here that will certainly help them immensely. Let me get to the one-loss teams, because there are a lot of people in all these places, especially the Big 12, who are eagerly trying to figure out how they stack up. What do you think?
Well, I think Texas and Oregon both have the best statements, the best resumes in terms of making that case for the best one-loss team. And I do think that the Texas win against Alabama in Tuscaloosa is the best non-conference win of the season. I still would say that Washington's win against Oregon is overall the best win as we sit here right now. But Oregon certainly has a claim to that top spot as a one-loss team, the best one-loss team. I think it'll be interesting, Paul, to see, does the selection committee completely ignore Oklahoma's head-to-head win against Texas in what is one of college football's most storied rivalries? I think they do, because Oklahoma lost to Kansas. They did not look good in that win to UCF. I think they dropped below. And to me, the Big 12's best bet for a college football playoff contender right now is Texas, in large part because of that win in Tuscaloosa. But as far as the one-loss teams go, I think Alabama is obviously still looking up at Texas for that reason, though if Texas loses to K-State, that could change very fast.
Heather, Alabama's path is pretty self-explanatory. We talked to Brian Kelly about 45 minutes ago. They're in an interesting spot, and you know where I'm going here. A win against Alabama Saturday night, hypothetically, and then run the table, beating Georgia perhaps. By then, Georgia moved up to one or two or someplace like there. Suddenly becomes maybe the best win of anyone. I realize we're getting 5 weeks ahead here, but address LSU's situation if they win out.
Well, I'll just remind everybody that no two-loss team has ever made the college football playoff. That certainly doesn't mean they can't. I'll go back to LSU last year, and we were talking about them until they lost in the SEC championship game. So I think that when you look at LSU defensively, they have some questions. Can they play better, more consistently down the stretch? But to me, they've got to worry about Ole Miss. They've got to worry about Florida State. I mean, the head-to-head things come into play, and the SEC West could be an interesting tiebreaker situation, quite honestly. And one of the reasons I have Ole Miss down below those teams is because, not below LSU, but below Alabama, is because Alabama has to lose twice for the Rebels to get back into the conversation. So there are a lot of things that can continue to happen, but LSU's biggest question mark as far as going all the way up might be what happens to Florida State, because that head-to-head at the beginning of the season will continue to matter, and it will probably continue to keep them ahead of LSU as long as Florida State doesn't lose. If Florida State stumbles somewhere down the stretch, then it could be a question.
Yeah, and Heather, Florida State has a great win, but that win could be discounted as well if LSU doesn't beat Alabama and then could lose somewhere else perhaps. So I want to ask you about Florida State, because suddenly they could be depreciated with LSU losing Saturday night, and the ACC has seen so much carnage and may still see more. Even undefeated, how secure do you think they would be?
If they're undefeated, I think they are fairly secure. And I think Florida State is a top four team tomorrow night when the rankings are revealed, because I'll remind people that not only is it wins against top 25 teams, but the committee will look at the entire resume and wins against teams 500 or better, of which Florida State right now has one of the best overall strength of records in the country, according to ESPN analytics. They're number two, I want to say, right behind Ohio State. So even though the Clemson win has been devalued, I would agree with you, Paul, though, that I think because of what's happened elsewhere in the ACC, they probably have to finish as an undefeated champion. But we don't know that yet, because we don't know what happens in the rest of the Power Five conferences and their championship games.
We don't know that, but what we do know is you'll be very busy for the next 28 hours, and we can't wait to talk to you again soon. Heather, thank you very, very much. Heather Dennis joining us from Texas, where the CFP is currently meeting and dining and having expensive wine, I'm sure. We'll take a short break. We have more to come, including your phone calls, right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and let's start this call segment here on a quiet note. Daryl is
what,
next.
Did Brock Bowers play on Saturday? I couldn't tell.
I didn't watch the game. I didn't think it was going to be that close a game, so I cut my grass.
Well, anytime you beat Florida, that will never get old. You know what I mean? Extending the series of streak will never get old. But, Paul, I'm going to tell you, that defensive line Georgia has, start his stride, Paul. Georgia has enough offensive weapons, even without Brock Bowers, to, I think, play with anybody in the country on the offensive side of football. If they get that defensive line going and they start hitting stride, they also have a good enough defense to shut anybody out, because that's our weak link. But the defensive line is starting to come on. Paul, I'm going to give you here's the play. This is the four teams that's going to be in the playoff, all right? You ready? All right, here we go. The winner of Ohio State, Michigan is in, okay? The loser's out. Boom. Florida State is in. I think they're going to end up undefeated. They're in. All right. The winner of Oregon, Washington is in. They'll make the 14 playoff. And the winner, it'd be Georgia, Alabama, or LSU, but I'm saying Georgia. I think we're going to have three undefeated teams in the 14 playoff. I think that's where it's going to be. And let me say one more thing real quick about Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. I mean, it looks like to me Harbaugh probably needs to come up with a better way to cheat if that's what he was trying to do, seeing how what happened when he played TCU, what happened when he played Georgia didn't have much of an effect. But you got to know, Paul, with that staffer, somebody sent that staffer there, right? I mean, somebody inside that football program sent that guy there. He didn't go there on his own. There's a lot more to it than that. But Jim Harbaugh is starting to become the Urban Meyer of college football. See you, Paul.
Daryl is the Urban Meyer of phone callers. AC is up next.
Mr. Feinbaum, how you feeling, sir? Thank you so much for taking my call. Absolutely. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All right. How's your weekend, sir?
Great.
Great, good, good. Alabama and LSU. So what's likely to happen next week? Alabama fans are crying on air how they lost their second game, or is it LSU Dwayne's going to cry and make excuses? What's more likely to happen, Mr. Feinbaum?
Well, I think the loser of this game is in bad shape. So
yes,
it's going to be a lot of crying going on Saturday night.
Of course, well, Saturday night, Sunday at the church, and Monday to your station. I think that's what's going to happen. But I do have LSU winning 40-35. The reason being is I want Alabama to fail. I want them to fail so bad. I want the crybabies to call in. And they are. LSU's done anyway. They already lost their second two games. So, man, they're out of it. So that means Georgia could run. That's going to burn up Alabama fans when they see Georgia in the SEC championship game and all the way to the playoffs. Cry me a river, Tide. Holla.
Those are two pretty rough calls in a row. Just a personal opinion here. Mike is up next. Hello, Mike. No, Mike. How about Buddy in Indiana? Hello, Buddy.
Hey, Paul. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say go Dogs. Been doing a little victory lap all weekend, cooking up some smoked gator. But I just wanted to say that lost in all the discourse about Georgia football and how they buy five stars and all that is the job that Kirby Smart is doing as head coach. All I've been hearing about Georgia football is how they're on upset alert every single week. But Coach Smart's had these boys ready to play, and he's developed Carson Beck from the beginning. He stuck by Mike Bobo at the start when he was calling them god-awful plays. But I think the job that Kirby Smart is doing, I think he deserves to win National Coach of the Year. And Georgia's going to roll undefeated to that Alabama game in the SEC Championship. And we're going to put a hurting on them, too.
Billy D is up next. Hello, Billy. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. So I'm watching the Mississippi State-Auburn game. And as you know, I'm a Mississippi State fan, grad. And I'm watching Zach. and he's got his arms crossed almost the whole game, and he looks like a deer in headlights. Like, he just – he doesn't know what to do. And so I was texting some friends of mine saying I was about to be on your show, and one of them said, Bill, ask him, like, are we looking at, like, just a complete scorched earth kind of thing at Mississippi State, or will the Egg Bowl maybe do something for somebody's job?
Well, Billy, I'll quit making excuses for the circumstances, because we're ten months removed from the tragedy, and this is Zach Arnett's program now, and it's on him. You know, I try to think, what would I do if I'm sitting there as the athletic director?
There you go.
I would make sure that Arnett is evaluated very seriously. I would want to know, what are your plans for next year? What is your staff circumstances? What is your recruiting? And then, this is something I would be doing every Monday, having a conversation.
Sure, but recruiting, who's going to want to come to a school? You know,
that's why these next couple of games are so critical, because...
Sure, but Paul, one quick question. Who do you think's out there if State was to, like, say, okay, we need a new head coach? Who?
Here's where it gets complicated. You just don't say, okay, give me the top coaches in the country. I know fans are going to say, well, you know, why are you being disrespectful? I'm not. I'm just being honest. Mississippi State is not a target job for the top five coaches in America. So you have to look beyond that. Is there a head coach who isn't coaching, who has been successful?
Like a Coach Kroom? You know, somebody
I'm thinking of somebody who, and I'm probably not including a former Mississippi State head coach in my conversation here. Dan Mullen, assuming that Dan Mullen can recover from the body blow that Kirby Smart laid on him after the game Saturday. That's where you look first. Who is available? Is there somebody sitting out right now that I could bring in here the day after the Egg Bowl and not have to wait? Secondly, is there a coordinator who looks like a can't miss? And those are always the trickiest.
Sure.
But I know one thing. I would be looking around. I mean, I try to shoot straight with people when you ask a legitimate question. And I would see how this next couple of weeks plays out. When you look at the schedule, you have only one sure win left, and that's not enough to get to be bowl eligible. And Mississippi State should be doing more than being bowl eligible. That's not enough. So then you go, what's the next line of demarcation? How do you compete at home in the Egg Bowl? That's a big game, as you know.
Nope.
And when that game is over, I think it's going to be self-explanatory whether Zach Arnett has earned another year or not.
Right, but you think somebody's going to go? You think the defensive coordinator is going to have to, like, be shown the door, or do you just, like, hold fast?
Yeah, I think it's just whichever door Arnett gets to first.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks.
Go easy, man.
I don't know how you can't. I mean, there are some tough situations right now in the SEC, but I think that's probably the most desperate. And that's why these, you know, what you do in November, it's all the cliches. It does matter how you finish, and you can make up a lot of ground by winning a game or two here and giving fans hope. And that's the problem right now, Mississippi State. Saturday was deflating. The win against Arkansas was good, but that was such a bad game. You got beaten by a team that is really has been patchwork so far. It was a huge win for Hugh Freeze, though. I know a lot of you weren't watching, but I'm just giving you the 20-cent version of the situation. Eddie is up next. Hello, Eddie.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today, buddy?
We are doing okay. Thank you.
Paul, I want to touch on something real important to me. Yes, I'm Alabama alum. Yes, I'm a previous player. I'm listening to all the – I'm not even going to go into SEC this morning's hosts. The naysayers, but everybody's got LSU beating Alabama handily, and
really?
I don't think it's going to be that kind of game.
Okay.
I'm listening to them. Can I bring up a tough point, Paul?
Of course.
LSU doesn't have any cornerbacks eligible to play football Saturday. They're trying to train wide receivers how to play cornerback as we speak.
They have some really humongous defensive issues.
I don't think that LSU's 40 points a game holds up to my defense, especially as good as we're playing.
No.
I think we're halfway there. You cut LSU Dak to 20 points and they lose. And, Paul, I'm listening to all the stuff on the playoffs, and I'm a smart football analyst. I wait till the end. There's a lot of cancel culture that's going to happen in those top five teams, especially when Oklahoma beats Texas again. If we played Texas 10 more times, we'd beat them 9 times. I believe that wholeheartedly. That killed us. That killed us on our playoff picture. I get that. But I'm really, really, really looking to see Alabama play a good Georgia football team in the SEC. That's our moniker right now, play Georgia.
Well, a week from today, that's probably, if Alabama prevails, and right now I would probably lean that in that direction, that's going to be the conversation, yes.
Paul, can I ask one quick question?
Yes.
If Ohio State ever loving more cow kills Michigan, which I know is going to happen, unfortunately, the best offense in the country is Ohio State's. Untested, as I see it is. I think Georgia's somewhat untested, but I think Georgia's got the same problem Alabama's got. 5-star, 5-deep's hard to overcome when you pick at the playground. If Ohio State cow kills Michigan, who gets in? Florida State's a pretender. If they do make it in, they get knocked off of whoever. Georgia, Ohio State will cow kill Florida, and the playoff committee knows that. Florida State holds no bearing in that game. I'd rather see Washington or Oregon than Florida State, to be honest.
Well, thanks for the call, Eddie. Whether we criticize them or not, I mean, they are not matching teams up. Otherwise, they would have never invited Cincinnati or TCU the last couple of years. I mean, they are literally, they probably over-evaluate, but I don't think it's that hard. I think tomorrow will be an endless exercise in futility as we wait that first reveal. I've watched this for 9 or 10 years now, and I've never really seen a difficult choice on Selection Day. Hey, thank you for the call. We head to the break. We've already had Brian Kelly. We had Heather talking about the CFP. Your phone call is right after that.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We continue, and Mike is up next in Alabama. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Paul. How are you today?
We are doing great.
I have one comment. Our Jacksonville State University Gamecocks will defeat the South Carolina Gamecocks Saturday. We will shock the world.
Well, you know what? Jack State has really looked good. I saw a couple of their games this year. Rich Rod has done a phenomenal job. I don't know.
Yes, sir, he has.
Very impressed with Rich Rod.
And he'll continue when we upset South Carolina.
Well, South Carolina is reeling right now.
That's true. Beamer may be gone after this. Who knows?
Let me make it clear. Beamer just signed a new contract extension. I don't think he'll be gone regardless of what happens Saturday.
Oh, okay.
But Rich Rod may not. Rich Rod may be gone if he wins this game. A lot of people might say, you know what, I'm going to take another shot at him. He has done a good job, though, and it's quite a redemption story. David is in Kansas. Hello, David.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Hey there.
Hey, I just got to say a few things about the Oklahoma Sooners and the Kansas Jayhawks. I was at that game. I'm a student at the University of Kansas, and I just think it's wild that Oklahoma Sooners have no good running backs, and the Kansas Jayhawks, of all teams in the country, have two running backs better than any running back on the Sooner roster.
That is amazing. So tell me this. What was it like on campus in the aftermath of that win?
Man, in Kansas, we say win or lose, we booze. Whenever we win, man, the scene downtown was absolutely crazy.
Well, I don't think people understand. Well, some of you do. What a win like that, and how that memory will be etched and indelible in your life moving forward. When I was in college, I don't remember any big wins. but I can only imagine what. Hey, well, David, thank you, and appreciate the heads up on the weekend in Lawrence. How about Stuart in North Carolina? Hello, Stuart.
Oh, Paul, Paul. What's up, baby?
Hey there.
Been a long time. Listen, I got two comments for you, and then I got a question. My first comment is, I do believe my Dogs, because they had an easy schedule the first half, and without Bowers in the second half, and having all these quality teams back to back to back, they're going to lose at least one game. That's my one comment. Second comment is, I believe that Kirby Smart is the greatest defensive mind ever in college football. Now, my question to you is, because you've been around college football a long time, who do you think is the greatest college football defense of all time? Because mine is the 1992 Alabama team, Teague, Langham, Copeland, Curry, 11 guys line up on the line of scrimmage and says, just beat us against that Toretta,
you know,
Miami,
you sure,
team.
I'm glad you brought that up. That was Bill Oliver's defense. And
yes, it was.
I spent many, many years ago. I mean, I couldn't tell you when this was, but it was obviously after 92. Bill Oliver, who was just a famous coach at Alabama, he coached at Auburn for a short time, and he had some friends who contacted me and wanted to write a book. And
wow.
So anyway, we met one afternoon, and he laid out that defense. You had two defensive ends who were both All-Americans, Copeland and Curry, who went on to be first-round draft choices. And he went through the season, but he especially went through the final game, which was against Miami. And I'm trying to remember, you may remember that game for the national championship. I think Alabama loaded the box. I mean, I think they brought the entire team.
They did. They lined 11 guys up. I've never seen this. All on the line of scrimmage. Nobody back. Everybody on the line.
Yeah, they were up against Gino Toretta, who just won the Heisman Trophy. And
that's exactly right.
I lost track. And I don't want to give too much away here, because he and the head coach had a major feud going the entire year. And a lot of people credited Gene Stallings, who was another defensive wizard. And
yep.
Oliver, in this conversation, wanted the credit, because he maintained, without getting too deep in the woods, that was his defense. It wasn't Gene Stallings. and I thought about it afterwards. I think Pat Smith may have been with me, that we sat and listened. It was fascinating to listen to, but in the end, I didn't see how we could turn this into a book.
Paul, would you say that maybe 2 years ago, 2021, the greatest front seven ever was that Georgia team?
Yeah, no, I think that you could argue that. I mean, there are a lot of variables here. I mean, I could pick out two or three Alabama teams.
2011.
Whose defense was as good as I've ever. I mean, the Alabama game with LSU in 2011. I mean, there has never been. I'll tell you a quick story. I was walking around. I think it was in the fourth quarter. I was on the sidelines. And I looked next to me, and I'm standing next to Urban Meyer, who was out of coaching. He was down there, I think, for ESPN covering the game.
Right.
And he told me, he said, I have never seen more talent on a football field in my life. I said, I'm sure you're enjoying it. He said, this game is killing me. I mean, he was very honest. He said, not to be coaching in a game like this. And obviously, he was back in it very quickly after that. But
well, now, Paul, these Georgia defenses you've seen in recent years, don't they remind you of those early years of Alabama when Kirby had
absolutely
them playing tight defense? And I'm going to tell you right now, ledge can take the ledge out and just call it the end. Where it cuts the ledge in, okay? Because I'm going to tell you right now, down deep inside, they're all mad because Kirby's not there coaching that defense.
Stuart, thank you. Appreciate it. Trey is up next in Tuscaloosa.
Well, Paul, I'm a little disappointed in you. You had an opportunity earlier to get the gavel out on back-to-back phone calls. I mean, you had two of them between Daryl and AC. That gavel would have come in handy.
Yeah, the House committee voted me out. I'm no longer speaker.
But Paul, two questions for you. Don't you think the most interesting thing tomorrow night is going to be where they rank Oklahoma against the other one-loss teams? Because I even think of Oklahoma as an undefeated one-loss Big 12 champion. They're going to have a hard time finding their way in. And then I want to, you know, with Fox and the SEC and Big 10 battling for these TV rights and everything, the funniest thing I have seen all weekend is Big Noon Saturday is advertising Northwestern and Iowa, and at the same time, CBS has Georgia, Mississippi. And then later that evening, they're advertising Purdue and Michigan, and CBS has Alabama and LSU. Now, I'm very, very interested to see what them ratings come out to be. And I see the line for the Georgia-Missouri game is 16.5. I'd like to get your opinion on that line, and thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, Trey, I mean, it seems really high because I have great respect for what Missouri is doing, but I also think it's an indicator of how the perception of Georgia has changed across the country. And what's also interesting is the Alabama line. I'll have somebody double-check this, but I'm pretty sure Jeremy Mills, our researcher, told us this earlier, that this is the narrowest line that Alabama has had since Saban's first year at home. This line started about 6. It went down to 3.5. I don't know where it is right this, -3. This is the lowest. Alabama has been favored in every home game since 2007 at home, and this is the narrowest line. I think the Texas game was about a touchdown, and that may have been one of the few under double digits. I mean, this, again, you can read all you want into the betting line. I'm just simply stating the perception of these two programs is very different. The teams are also very different. I think they're valuing LSU against Alabama a lot more than they're valuing Missouri against Georgia. We'll take a short break. We are back with much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We continue. John is in Pell City, Alabama. Hello, John.
Hey.
Hi there.
Paul?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Oh, thank you. Man, what a privilege it is to talk to you today.
Thank you very much.
The greatest show on radio, the greatest show on TV. I've listened to you for years, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate everything you do. But just wanted to bring up Jimbo Fisher real quick, just make a couple comments and take it from there. But he's a joke. And I understand there's a $77 million buyout. So, you know, where is the fear? What is motivating this man to do a better job? Nothing. And the other comment I wanted to make about Clemson, can't believe the situation they're in right now this year. And as good as Clemson was and Dabo Swinney, what about Alabama? When's the next foot fixing to drop for Alabama? Because I think they're susceptible. And Georgia, what a cakewalk. I can't believe the schedule they've had this year. And, you know, we'll see. But and also Hugh Freeze and the Auburn Tigers, just curious what you think about their next couple of years and the future they have with Hugh Freeze. So that's a lot. That's across the board. But I'm just so and incredibly, yeah, it's just crazy that I get to talk to you. I called into your show about 20 years ago, and that's the last time I've called in. Moved out of the state and then moved back, and I just couldn't wait to pick up your show and everything you do. So thank you for college football and everything that you do to keep things rolling. All right?
John, thank you. It was a great pleasure to connect with you, and I really do appreciate what you said. As far as Hugh Freeze, that was the last thing you said. I thought that was really a big win for them. You have to start building a program somehow, and I think there's been a couple of moments this year that have been really rough for the Auburn Tigers, but I thought that was a good one. You know, beating a team that had just won on the road, and I think you can do something with that. There are a couple of winnable opportunities over these next few weeks for Auburn. I think they can be in really decent shape heading into the Iron Bowl in 5 weeks. Thank you very much for the call. Carl is in Georgia. Hello, Carl.
Hi, Paul. This is Carl from Statesboro, Georgia. How are you doing today?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Well, you look great, and I've enjoyed your programs through the years. I just had a few takeaways out. I took my son, Matt, and my two best friends, John and Carl, for a road trip down to Jacksonville this weekend, and it was a great atmosphere and a great game. I just had a few takeaways from the game.
Sure.
Once is I didn't see any drive-extending penalties. Georgia has had that problem throughout the year where they give up a penalty that would extend drives and teams could turn those into points. Didn't see it. Also, I didn't see any fumbles at all, which those were another problem that I'd seen. And I saw a very good special teams play, you know, a block punt. I've seen all the field goals being made. I saw the defensive stops. I saw a great one-handed catch by Delp. I saw Bell make a great grab in the end zone from a beautiful pass from Carson Beck. And then he took a pop and he hung onto the ball. And I saw about eight different players make receptions. So what do you think about that?
I thought it was a really good game for Georgia. And I think the score was a little bit deceiving. You just kind of flip around and you don't watch the game and it's, 43 to 20. In my mind, a 36-7 game. That's where it was at one point. And Florida put a couple of touchdowns on the board after that. But it was a stomping. And I compliment the Georgia sideline for that. Matt is up next in San Antonio.
Hey, brother, look, I think we could win this game if I want you to hear me out first. I know you don't like statistics, but particularly, I can't say it correctly, Ole Miss likes to establish a run 50% of the time. If A&M could take away the run, give pressure on their quarterback, and force him to drop back, A&M, 12% of the time, they're good at rushing the passer this year. Since our secondary is not that great. So it's going to be a defensive game. The defense has to help us win this game to keep us close in there.
You know, Matt, I think that's a really good analysis. I mean, I think there is a route and a path for Ole Miss to be upset Saturday. I'm not counting on it, but I think A&M causes problems for them.
The problem with A&M is their offensive line establishing or affecting Max Johnson. So if you do that, they can win the game as well. That's the good news I want to tell you, brother. I'm moving in with my brother Mel, me, my mom, my niece, to pay money to go home. But if I get the money saved up first to go home, I want you to come visit me in San Antonio. So me and my TCU brother, Legend, and all my friends on the show, we're going to have blue Hawaiian drinks.
Matt, count on it. We'll do it. We'll make it happen.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.